I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, and this is Justice by Design, a podcast that recognizes that justice doesn't just happen. It is put together by the work of people dedicated to ensuring it comes to fruition. You know, whether it's from podcast episodes or my appearances on MSNBC or the columns that I write in the Boston Globe, I often hear back from people that say, you know, what can I do to bring about the change that you're talking about? And a response that I frequently give is vote and hold your leaders accountable. If you have leaders who are doing the job that the electorate hires them to do, then a lot of these problems will get solved. But often it's really hard to know who those best people are. It's hard to judge what kind of job they're doing even after they're elected and they're in Congress. Think about it right now. How do you think your member of Congress is doing? How do you think other members of Congress are doing? What's the metric to measure that? It can be really confusing. And that's why I'm so excited to have my guest today, Tom Fishman, who is the CEO of the Builders Movement, who is doing things differently. Tom, thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me on, Kim.
So before we get started, Tom, introduce yourself and tell us what you do at the Builders Movement.
Yeah, so I'm Tom Fishman. I've been leading the Builders Movement, formerly known as Starts With Us, for the past 3 years since launch. And we are building a movement and seeking to equip citizens worldwide to overcome the sort of toxic us versus them polarization we see out in the world on the path to solving our toughest problems together.
And you have a new Builders project that just launched. Full disclosure, I play a small part in it. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Excuse me. Yeah, so we've recently launched the Builders Power Rankings, which is a weekly ranking of U.S. Congress on their modeling of constructive problem-solving behaviors as they go about trying to represent the will of the people every day. We have worked with an organization, our partners over at the Polarization Research Lab, which is a joint initiative between Stanford, Dartmouth, and the University of Pennsylvania that uses technology, AI, machine learning, publicly available data to analyze all of our congressional representatives and analyze their public speech, from floor speeches to social media to email newsletters that so many of us get, too many of, combines that with their legislative productivity. And we've worked with them to construct what's called a builder score. So that's a sort of narrowed evaluation of our representatives' propensity to have substantive policy discussions, to have constructive debate across lines of difference, how much they're doing, taking part in personal attacks and ad hominems, which of course you get a negative score for, and their legislative productivity. Are you introducing, co-sponsoring, and passing actual bills? So those four metrics combine into a composite builder score that the Power Rankings uses to do a weekly ranker of all of our representatives. And we then show the top five Democrats and Republicans in a given week and the bottom five Democrats and Republicans in a given week, hoping to spark kind of debate, discussion amongst citizens around how we evaluate whether or not our representatives are indeed doing a good job at creating solutions on their behalf.
So one thing that I found interesting about this is, you call it, in a way, like something like, you know, football score or football reporting that you see sports reporting on TV. You know, they have power rankings. They have who's up and who's down and who is the player of the week. And I've said many times, including on this podcast, I don't think that politics should be covered like sports. It should be about the stakes, not the odds and all of that. But this strikes me as different. It's not that it's the focus on the stakes, but it is fostering a real discussion about what we really want our lawmakers to be doing. Do we want them just to be obstructing? Do we want them just to be engaging in negative partisan discourse, or do we want them actually to be doing something. So for anybody who, like me, might be skeptical to say, okay, I don't like politics being treated this way. What do you say about the way the Builders Rankings approaches this?
Yeah, it's such a good point. And that concern certainly comes up at Builders all the time. The idea of the sort of zero sum, you know, highlight reel dunking on each other, like all the metaphors, the sort of almost ESPNification of cable news and the talking head. So yeah. Listen, we're trying to build a scaled movement and of people who are willing to engage with these ideas. And we decided to lean into it and lean into the sports metaphor. And the thing that we like about the power rankings in football is that they give us a weekly defensible but debatable way of actually talking about who is the best team, and people move up and move down, as you said. What we do, we know that the AI and the machine learning that we are using with our partners over at Polarization Research Lab are very defensible. They're incredibly rigorous in terms of the work that they do to tune these sort of GPT models, to try to remove bias, to do the best they can, of course, to do that. But ultimately, it is debatable. And the debate that we want to be having, the conversation we want to see out in the world is, you know, what does it mean for our electeds to do a good job on our behalf? Which inherently invites people to debate and perhaps disagree with our particular ranking. If we're having the discussion that, you know, around, oh, I wouldn't have ranked him or her as highly as that or as lowly as that, and here's why, I think that the project is a success. The idea is not that it's an objective ranking. It's that we want to try to empower and engender a productive conversation such that that mindset is something that citizens carry with them into civic conversations in their living room, at their jobs, potentially, or taking with them behind the curtain at the voting booth. So whether or not we like it, the sort of sportsification, a word I just made up, is a reality. So we need to surf the waves of the way in which people are actually talking and meet them where they are with tools that not only they can use, but things they find engaging, things that they find captivating, and things that ultimately do allow them to have those constructive conversations we'd love to see.
So explain a little bit more how the metrics that you use work, because it also occurs to me that we have had in our history members of the House and Senate who have given fiery rhetorical speeches, but who also worked in a way that I think would have given them a high Builders ranking score, right? So you have someone like Ted Kennedy, for example. He was called, you know, the lion because of the way that he would give fiery speeches and floor statements about issues that were important to him that were really leaning left. But then he would go behind closed doors and work with the John McCains and work with the Orrin Hatches and the other people to actually say, okay, how are we going to get this done? What do you need? And actually do the work of legislating behind closed doors. So if the algorithms are looking at this publicly available information, how does it ensure that you are catching people like that and not just scoring them low because of what they say in front of the cameras?
That's such a good point. So let me start out with a sort of macro point. We define being a builder as somebody who is a flexible thinker, a constructive problem solver, somebody who's recognizing the dignity of all people. Nowhere in there do we seek, or do we even think it's a good idea for people to sort of come to some vanilla middle to sort of declaw their most passionately held beliefs. This is a way of approaching conflict constructively and with a solution-oriented mindset. And I think that the builder's mindset exists alongside our advocacy, alongside our activism. It's a tool for creating the conditions and the opportunity for greater coalitions and more durable solutions to the problems that affect us. So it's really important to me that that we're getting that across. This is a mindset that exists alongside passionate belief and conviction, which we know a diversity of those kinds of beliefs and convictions lead to the best possible solutions. This comes up in the social science quite frequently. Drilling into the power rankings itself, those four metrics that create the composite are propensity for substantive policy discussion, the constructive debate across lines of difference, which measures strong language that is solution oriented. What we don't want to see are those things questioning morality, intelligence, integrity, even if any of us might agree with those sentiments, we do question, are they helpful? Do they create the conditions for, you know, actual solution creation, for consensus, for the, you know, the doing the hard work of democracy, or do they further sow division? And the last thing I would add is the legislative efficacy metric that captures whether or not, you know, in the actual process of lawmaking, these officials are being effective in, again, introducing, co-sponsoring, or actually getting bills passed with extra points for passing them in a bipartisan way. So I would not claim that it is a perfect or an objective measure. That's not what it tries to be. It tries to engender a certain kind of a conversation, but we have worked hard to try to capture just the kind of scenarios that you're thinking about. We want fiery, convincing, you know, people representing us and our interests in government. And we have to, of course, make space in this metric for that to be the case.
So as we speak, there has already been rankings. The first rankings have already come out. I will include a link in the show notes to the rankings so that our listeners can see them. But the people who are ranking toward the top are people like Congresswoman Jennifer Wexton. You also have Senator Todd Young from Indiana, ranking toward the bottom as the top of the dividers, as you list them, are people like Congressman Eric Swalwell and Congressman Clay Higgins. So talk a little bit about this. What do we take away from this? It's not strictly done on partisan lines. It's not done on partisan lines at all. But just using some of these examples, how are they builders and dividers as you see it?
Yeah, so a few things worth noting here. One is, I would definitely urge listeners to go see, we have weekly panelists as a part of the process to pull these rankings together, of which we're excited, Kim, to invite you to be a part of that sort of human layer and intelligence layer on top of the artificial intelligence to bring the kind of nuance and model the kind of debate we hope to see and discussion we hope to see out in the world. In the panelists' discussions, in the first 2 weeks that we've had, the one for this week just went live earlier this week, we see the kinds of discussions that bring up the safety of their districts, the incentives of an election season. There are so many things that and sort of pieces of civic nuance that I suspect everyday Americans are not necessarily thinking about or discussing maybe every single day, that get teased out when you do an analysis like this. Well, what's actually causing folks to, you know, there was a discussion just this week on the panel about folks who are in tight races in, you know, very sort of purple districts have an incentive to be sort of more bipartisan in the way that they present and in the way that they vote. So these are the kinds of things that we see. One thing that's really important is that the builders list and the dividers list are both of the week. Builders of the week, dividers of the week. And that's important. We're not branding people forever. This is not a label we put on somebody based on an evaluation of their historical record, which can be frustrating sometimes if you see somebody who you think should be on the dividers list for all time, the Hall of Fame, and is not there this week. Or the opposite. Why isn't this person who's so builderly, you know, or has this builder's mindset, why are they on the dividers list this week? And that's important because, one, it takes constant work and to sort of strive to be a builder. But if you're a divider 1 week, we can all slip up and there's a growth path. It's important to us that people feel incentivized, that and that our electeds are incentivized by their constituencies to grow, to improve, to do better next week if you didn't do as well as you could have last week, and to keep doing great if you did well for the last 10 weeks in a row. So that's really important. And what we see then week to week is the things that tend to, you know, we do take into account historical data, but we weight the communications and the sort of legislative activity of the most recent week or two. So you'll see people who, you know, their history of maybe legislative inefficacy or personal attacks will drag them down over time. Something that's really sort of eye-catching for better or ill, couldn't place them on the list. But yeah, the personal attacks, the ability, you know, can pull you onto that dividers list. And we see a lot of people showing up on the builders list that have done great bipartisan work in speech and in action in the recent week or two. So that's sort of a way that we're starting to see things pop up. We're getting a really good look at incentives and the things that kind of drive placement on the list.
So tell us more about the analysts that you have for this project. You have people like Kara Swisher, Carl Rove, myself, who come together and debate a little bit why they think the rankings are. They may agree, they may disagree. What is their role in this, and why do you think that's such an important part of this project?
Yeah, so this is, again, the sort of, we start out from a place of artificial intelligence and machine learning to do this massive data analysis of all this public speech and legislative activity. But anybody who has used, you know, Claude or ChatGPT or any of these tools knows that they don't always get it right, even in the best case scenarios. So what we want is, one, a gut check. Is there something here that doesn't quite make sense as we look at it? And can we tease out nuance about what landed somebody on either of these lists in a given week? But two, there's an opportunity for these great panelists who we really went to lengths to seek out people from different backgrounds professionally, different backgrounds ideologically, different backgrounds demographically, to try to sort of model the dialogue we hope to see out in the world when people are thinking about, and one of my favorite kinds of topics that, or lines of thinking that comes up when our panelists are discussing a weekly ranking, which you can take this for the one that you're on, is when they say, I wouldn't have done it this way. This is how I would have done it. I think we should be ranking this higher, or this is, the ranking is actually missing this piece of nuance. A really good example was in week one, we had Minority Speaker Hakeem Jeffries on the dividers list, which was quite surprising to most. Somebody who has a reputation amongst the panelists as being, I think as Andrew Yang said, even-handed, bipartisan, somebody who generally has that kind of a reputation because of the way his response to some really widely condemned remarks made by Clay Higgins came off. And it created this great discussion between Andrew Yang, Kara Swisher, and Carl Rove around what is the expectation when somebody is under attack, when they feel under attack in a way that's quite obviously racially charged. And, you know, how do we expect people to respond to that in a way that condemns it, but also doesn't paint the other side, quote unquote, with too broad a brush? Is there a right answer there? We all are going to have a strong opinion depending on it, but that kind of nuance is important. We don't get that on cable news. We don't get that in our social media feeds usually, and that came from an unexpected placement on a list. So, you know, Speaker Jeffries will have every opportunity to continue to be on, you know, on the builders list, you know, going forward. That sort of wasn't the point, was to, you know, put him or any representative in a bucket. It was to engender the subsequent conversation about what our expectations are outside of the binaries of this person won, this person lost, this person's good, this person's evil. That's what we get in the flattened environment, communications and media environment, in particular in social media.
You know, it's interesting. As I'm thinking about this and thinking about the analogy you make to football coverage, I think one thing that you do see in sports is that you see the players themselves after games talking about where they are and what was going through their mind and how they felt about the performance. Is there any room here for lawmakers themselves who see this to say, well, you know what, I have, you know, say, for example, and this is all hypothetical, I've not talked to the minority leader in the House, but if Leader Jeffries has said, you know what, there are a lot of Haitian Americans in my district, and I found particularly offensive what Congressman Higgins said, and so I was forcefully defending them, and that was sort of giving the, you know, his version of there's no I in team, and we all came to this to win today. Is there room for that sort of engagement by the subjects of these rankings themselves?
That's not currently built into the Power Rankings product, but the best case scenario is that that kind of reflection, agree, disagree, debate, so long as it's constructive and engaging with the substance itself, We'd love to see that happening publicly. That's the kind of discourse. Let's flood the zone. Yeah, the sports metaphors. Just, I'm promise I'm not doing this on purpose, but like let's sort of flood the zone with on X, on Instagram, on YouTube, on TikTok, with that kind of reflection and discussion. It can be vehement disagreement. That only serves to further, in my opinion, create a depth of relationship and personalization with our elected leaders, and to have just a really substantive discussion around those choices, to have an actual conversation that extends beyond the moment, which is just a thing that we see quite rarely.
So right now, the power rankings are focused on members of the House and Senate. Why did you start with them in terms of doing these rankings? And are there plans to expand that, say, to other elected offices, maybe local offices or gubernatorial offices?
Yeah, great questions. So aside from the sort of nonstop and fever pitch coverage of the presidential election, our congressional representatives, they occupy this unique place in our lives, not only in, of course, being more sort of connected to most of us in a local sense, but there's also just the realities that something like 90, it could be more than 90 now, depending on the cycle, percent of incumbents get reelected. And when you compare that with the polling that has somewhere between 10 and 13% of citizen satisfaction with Congress, that's a really striking disparity. How do we close that gap between our dissatisfaction with our electeds and a sense of like, what can we, where can we find a toehold to take a different kind of action and rethink the incentives that will get people doing things that from the rhetoric and speech to the actual legislative action that solve problems, that improve the material conditions around us? Because all the incentives now, as we all know, are to sort of, be a social media star, to have the winning soundbite that dunks on somebody, generally, kind of feeding red meat to a base, depending on the district. And so Congress represents a really unique opportunity for that kind of national visibility, local relevance, and a gap that needs to be closed between incumbent re-election percentage and sort of dissatisfaction with the job. We are, it's sort of TBD. I don't want to give away too much, but the idea of even greater relevance locally and state level sort of legislature analysis is very interesting to us and to our partners at the Polarization Research Lab, but you'll have to stay tuned for more. That's as clickbait as I'm
going to get,
but yeah, we're really interested in it.
All right, fair enough. So I just want to talk a little bit, and this is something I admit, I've said it before, I'm afraid of AI. I'm still building my trust with it. The more I talk to people in science, in the field, in politics, I'm beginning to lose some of that fear once I become more familiar with ways that AI are being used effectively to make our world better. I still have the Black Mirror idea in my head. And so, I see those little robot dogs and I think that's we're all going to die because of AI. But sort of explain a little bit, this seems like an example of AI being put to a use that is useful with human touch, which is often the thing that is needed. You need that human element to it. But talk a little bit about that for people who may be, like me, kind of skeptical when they hear, oh, this is being put together by a computer. A computer doesn't understand what I need in the legislator. A computer can't gauge what I think is a good leader. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I think that AI is a tool. It's a co-pilot. It helps us do really complex tasks quite quickly. I think that is there. We'll take a very brief left turn in like need for thoughtful regulation. A sense of ensuring that it's safe. That of safeguarding what happens if and when it falls into the wrong hands. Absolutely. The potential for any technology, in particular, it feels like we just lived through this with social media, in terms of seeing what kind of damage it can wreak if left, sort of totally unchecked or at least not thoughtfully sort of deployed. That's a real thing. That's a personal opinion, not a sort of a builder's statement. It's just it's something I absolutely agree with you. We need to be careful about. But in its current useful deployments, the ability for it to do really complex analyses, in particular of language and categorization of language, is sort of unmatched. And there's a lot to be excited about, so long as we have it in the right place in our minds. Again, is this the truth? Is this the objective way to go out there? Listen, what the power rankings does not do is talk about the substance of people's policy positions. Very important, right? It doesn't do, for example, it doesn't do fact checking, or and that obviously is its own whole, sadly, sort of a politicized thing, but it's a tool on an emerging shelf of tools for us to make smarter and better choices. And I think as long as we know that it requires a human touch, it requires critical thinking, the point of it, the power rankings, is discussion and debate, not to convince anybody of some objective truth, but to have the kinds of conversations and to engender the kind of mindset we want. That's what we're looking for here. So we don't want to over-rely on the robots. I like, I'm going to date myself here. I like Rosie from the Jetsons. She's helping out. She's around. It's probably, looking back on it, a little problematic, a little bit, sort of a gender thing happening. But I think the robot that can be the co-pilot and be helpful is the way that we look at it. And the way that power rankings should empower citizens is just that. This is a data point that hopefully helps us focus in right on where you started, Kim, which is, how do we decide whether or not these folks are doing a good job in the swirl of data and media available to us now all the time?
Yeah, I'm really gonna date myself. Not all the way back to the original, but the syndicated Lost in Space, with the robot. Danger, danger.
Exactly.
Very useful robot.
Exactly.
Danger, Will Robinson.
Yes, I want a floating orb, Jarvis, like somebody who's nearby. Just help me out. I got a lot going on. And I think that this is, this hopefully is helping to do some sense making, but doesn't do our thinking for us, right?
Well,
A little bit of how to think, not what to think.
Yes, and pushing the conversation and hopefully in expanding that discourse among the electorate,
That's right.
taking it out of the hands of folks like me and helping folks like our listeners make better decisions when it's time to go to the ballot box, or even in the meantime, just letting them know how their lawmakers are doing. Tom Fishman, thank you so much for joining me today. I will put the information in the show notes, but can you just let our listeners know where they can find the Builders Rankings?
You can go to buildersranking.com, check it out, discuss it, debate it, share it with friends, frenemies. And you can always go to buildersmovement.org and learn more about what we're up to. I'm really grateful to have had the chance to talk about it with you, Kim. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thanks for coming. One thing I think is so important about finding new and innovative ways to get information to people, even ways that use new tools like AI, is that we are increasingly in such a fragmented media world. People get their information from so many different sources, and we don't always know who to trust. We need more sources of people that are checking each other, that are actually engaging in discussions instead of just lecturing to you. That shows, that demonstrates what it is to listen to other people's views and help that form yours or challenge yours so that you can better defend yours. And I think if you see that demonstrated, if you see that modeled, that it helps listeners, Americans, viewers, voters make better decisions. And it also models what our leaders should be doing themselves. One thing I love about what Tom and the builders are doing is that it is showing not only that we can come from different places, different views, different ideologies, and come together and have a discussion based on what we think is best for the nation, but that lawmakers can do that too. And this is done on a weekly basis, so they can always be striving to do better because they know that there is some metric that is measuring just how they're doing. It's just like when you're in a store and you see a little box that says, "Tell us how we're doing." It's giving them that feedback that they need. They don't have to wait till election day to do it. So This seems like a pretty good idea to me. And I'm not just saying that because I am one of the analysts. I am one of the analysts because I think it's a good idea. Thank you for listening to Justice by Design. Don't forget to follow the podcast wherever you get your pods. We are growing with every week, and that's because of you. Also, give us 5 stars because that helps other people find it. We rely on you to spread the word about all the people that I'm talking to who are finding real solutions to the issues that we face every day. They are designing that justice. And it's because of you that I can do this every week. Thanks for joining me today. See you next week.